2. Kel was halfway down the stairs when he was met by a short ostra with a trimmed beard and a frazzled look. Parlo, the prince's shadow since the tournament preparations first began.
"Master Kel," he said, breathless, "the prince is not with you?"
Kel cocked his head. "I assumed he was already downstairs." Parlo shook his head.
"Could something be wrong?"
"Nothing's wrong," said Kel with certainty.
"Well, then, it's about to be. The king is losing patience. Most of the guests are here, and the prince has not yet made an entrance."
"Perhaps that's exactly what he's trying to make." Parlo looked sick with panic. "If you're worried, why don't you go to his room and fetch him?" The ostra paled even further, as if Kel had just suggested something unfathomable, obscene. "Fine," grumbled Kel, turning back up the stairs.
"I'll do it."
Tolnus and Vis were standing outside Rai's room. Kel was a few strides shy of the chamber when the doors burst open and a figure came striding out. A figure that most certainly wasn't Rai. The guard's eyes widened at the sight of him. The man obviously hadn't gone in that way. Kel pulled up short as they nearly collided, and even though it had been years, too few in Kel's estimation, he recognized the man at once.
"Alucard Emery,"
he said coldly, exhaling the name like a curse. A slow smile spread across the man's mouth, and it took all Kel's restraint not to physically remove it.
"Master Kel," said Alucard cheerfully, "what an unexpected pleasure running into you here."
His voice had a natural undercurrent of laughter in it, and Kel could never tell if he was being mocked.
"I don't see how it's unexpected," said Kel, "as I live here. What is unexpected is running into you, since I thought I made myself quite clear the last time we met."
"Quiet," echoed Alucard.
"Then what are you doing in my brother's chambers?"
Alucard raised a single studded brow.
"Do you want a detailed account, or will a summary suffice?"
Kel's fingernails dug into his palms. He could feel blood. Spells came to mind, a dozen different ways to wipe the smug look from Emery's face.
"Why are you here?" he growled. "I'm sure you've heard," said Alucard, hands in his pockets. "I'm competing in the Essentage. As such, I was invited to the Royal Palace for the banner night."
"Which is happening downstairs, not in the prince's room. Are you lost?"
He didn't wait for Alucard to answer.
"Tolnus!"
he snapped. The guard stepped forward.
"Escort Master Emery to the Rose Hall. Make sure he doesn't wander."
Tolnus motioned, as if to take hold of Alucard's sleeve, and found himself propelled suddenly backward into the wall. Alucard never took his hands from his pockets, and his smile never wavered as he said,
"I'm sure I can find my way."
He set off in the direction of the stairs, but as he passed Kel, the latter caught his elbow.
"Do you remember what I told you before banishing you from this city?"
"Vaguely. Your threats all seem to run together."
"I said," snarled Kel through clenched teeth, "that if you break my brother's heart a second time, I will cut yours out. I stand by that promise, Alucard."
"Still fond of growling, aren't you, Kel? Ever the loyal dog, nipping at heels? Maybe one day you'll actually bite."
With that, he pulled free and strode away, his silver-blue cloak billowing behind him. Kel watched him go. The moment Alucard was out of sight, he slammed his fist into the wall, hard enough to crack the inlaid wooden panel. He swore in pain and frustration, and an echoing curse came from within Rai's chambers, but this time Kel didn't feel bad for causing his brother a little pain. Blood stained his palm where his nails had sliced into the skin, and Kel pressed it to the broken decoration.
"Asura,"
he muttered. "Unbreak." The crack in the wood began to withdraw, the pieces of wood blending back together. He kept his hand there, trying to loosen the knot in his chest.
"Master Kel?" started Vis.
"What?" he snapped, spinning on the guards. The air in the hall turned around him. The floorboards trembled. The men looked pale.
"If you see that man near Rai's rooms again, arrest him," Kell took a steadying breath, and was reaching for the prince's door when it swung inward to reveal Rai, settling the gold band atop his head. When he saw the gathering of guards, and Kell at their center, he cocked his head.
"What?"
he said.
"I'm not that late."
Before anyone else could speak, Rai set off down the hall.
"Don't just stand there, Kell," he called back. "We have a party to host."
"You're in a mood," said the prince as they passed into the dignified splendor of the Rose Hall. Kell said nothing, trying to salvage the man he'd seen earlier in his bedroom mirror. He scanned the hall, his attention snagging almost instantly on Alucard Emery, who stood socializing with a group of magicians.
"Honestly, Kell," chided Rai, "if looks could kill..."
"Maybe looks can't," he said, flexing his fingers. Rai smiled and nodded his head at a cluster of guests.
"You knew he was coming," he said through set teeth.
"I didn't realize you'd be giving him such an intimate welcome," snapped Kell in return. "How could you be so foolish?"
"I didn't invite him in after everything that's happened."
"Enough,"
hissed the prince, loud enough to turn the nearest heads. Kell would have shrunk from the attention, but Rai spread his arms, embracing it.
"Father,"
he called across the hall,
"if I may do the honors?"
King Maxim lifted his glass in reply, and Rai stepped lithely up onto the nearest stone planter, and the gathering fell quiet.
"Avan,"
he said, voice echoing through the hall.
"Gladach Sasors,"
he added to the guests from Vesk and Pharaoh.
"I am Prince Rai Maresh," he continued, slipping back into Arnesian. "Maxim and Emira, the illustrious king and queen of Arns, my father and mother, have given me the honor of hosting this tournament, and it is an honor."
He lifted a hand, and a wave of royal servants appeared, carrying trays laden with crystal goblets, candied fruits, smoked meat, and a dozen other delicacies.
"Tomorrow, you shall be introduced as champions. Tonight, I ask you to enjoy yourselves as honored guests and friends. Drink, feast, and claim your sigil. In the morning, the games begin."
Rai bowed, and the crowd of gathered magicians and royals applauded as he hopped down from his perch. The tide of people shifted, some toward the banquets, others toward the banner tables.
"Impressive," observed Kell.
"Come on," said Rai, without meeting his eye.
"One of us needs a drink."
"Stop!" Lila had just started up the palace steps, the demon's mask beneath her arm, when she heard the order. She stiffened, her fingers reaching reflexively for the knife at her back, as a pair of guards in gleaming armor blocked her path. Her pulse pounded, urging her to fight or flee, but Lila forced herself to hold her ground. They weren't drawing weapons.
"I'm here for the banner night," she said, drawing Elsor's royal verification from her coat. "I was told to report to the palace."
"You want the Rose Hall," explained the first guard, as if Lila had a damn clue where that was.
The other guard pointed at a second, smaller set of stairs. Lila had never noticed the other entrances to the palace. There were two, flanking the main steps, and both were tame by comparison. But now that they'd been pointed out, the flow of traffic up and around those steps compared to the empty grand entrance was obvious, as was the fact that the doors to the Rose Hall had been flung open, while the palace's main entrance was firmly shut.
"Solas," she said, shaking her head. "I must be more nervous than I thought."
The guards smiled.
"I will lead you," said one,
as if she might honestly go astray a second time. The guard ushered her over to the right set of stairs and up, before handing her off to an attendant, who led her through the entryway and into the Rose Hall. It was an impressive space, less ballroom than throne room, undoubtedly refined without being ostentatious. How far she'd come, she thought wryly, to find massive urns of fresh-cut flowers and sumptuous red and gold tapestries, restrained. A familiar captain stood near the mouth of the hall, dressed in silver and midnight blue. He saw Lila, and his face passed through several reactions before settling on cool appraisal.
"Master Elsor. Master Emery."
Lila gave a flourish and a bow, stiffening her posture into angles. Alucard shook his head.
"I honestly don't know whether to be impressed or unnerved."
Lila straightened. "The two aren't mutually exclusive." He nodded at the Saro's mask under her arm.
"Do you want to be found out?"
Lila shrugged.
"There are many shadows in the night."
She caught sight of the mask tucked beneath his own arm. Made of dark blue scales, their edges tipped with silver, the mask ran from hairline to cheekbone. Once on, it would leave his charmer's smile exposed and do nothing to tame the crown of brassy curls that rose above. The mask itself looked purely aesthetic, its scales offering neither anonymity nor protection.
"What are you supposed to be?" she asked in Arnesian.
"A fish?" Alucard made a noise of mock affront.
"Obviously," he said, brandishing the helmet. "I'm a dragon."
"Wouldn't it make more sense for you to be a fish?" challenged Lila. "After all, you do live on the sea, and you are rather slippery, and..."
"I'm a dragon," he interjected. "You're just not being very imaginative."
Lila grinned, partly in amusement and partly in relief as they fell into a familiar banter.
"I thought House Emery's sigil was a feather. Shouldn't you be a bird?"
Alucard wrapped his fingers on the mask.
"My family is full of birds," he said,
the words laced with spite.
"My father was a vulture. My mother was a magpie. My oldest brother is a crow. My sister, a sparrow. I have never really been a bird."
Lila resisted the urge to say he might have been a peacock. It didn't seem the time.
"But our house symbol," he went on, "it represents flight, and birds are not the only things that fly."
He held up the dragon mask.
"Besides, I am not competing for House Emery. I am competing for myself. And if you could see the rest of my outfit, you wouldn't..."
"Do you have wings? Or a tail?"
"Well, no. Those would get in the way. But I do have more scales."
"So does a fish."
"Go away," he snapped.
But there was humor in his voice, and soon they fell into an easy laugh, and then remembered where they were, who they were.
"Emery," called Jinnar, appearing at the captain's elbow.
His mask, a silver crown that curled like spun sugar, or perhaps a swirl of air, hung from his fingertips. His feet were firmly on the floor tonight, but she could practically feel the hum of energy coming off him, see it blur his edges, like a hummingbird. How would she fight a hummingbird? How would she fight any of them?
"And who's this?" asked Jinnar, glancing at Lila.
"Why, Jinnar," said Alucard drolly. "Don't you recognize our Master Elsor?"
The magician's silver eyes narrowed. Lila raised a challenging brow. Jinnar had met the real Stacion Elsor back in the tavern. Now his metallic eyes swept over her, confused and then suspicious. Lila's fingers twitched, and Alucard's hand came to rest on her shoulder. Whether it was to show solidarity or keep her from drawing a weapon, she didn't know.
"Master Elsor," said Jinnar slowly, "you look different tonight."
"But then again," he added, eyes flicking to Alucard, "the light was so low in the tavern, and I haven't seen you since."
"An easy mistake to make," said Lila smoothly. "I'm not overly fond of displays."
"Well," chimed in Alucard brightly, "I do hope you'll overcome that once we take the stage."
"I'm sure I'll find my stride," retorted Lila.
I'm sure you will.
A beat of silence hung between them, remarkable considering the din of the gathering crowd.
Well, if you'll excuse me, said Alucard, breaking the moment. I've yet to properly harass Brost, and I'm determined to meet this Kamarov fellow.
It was nice to meet you.
Again, said Jannar, before following Alucard away.
Lila watched them go, then began to weave through the crowd, trying to keep her features set in resignation, as if mingling with dozens of imperial magicians was commonplace. Along one wall, tables were laden with swatches of fabric and pitchers of ink, and magicians turned through pages of designs as they declared their banners. A crow on green, a flame on white, a rose on black, pennants that would wave from the stands the following day. Lila plucked a crystal goblet from a servant's tray, weighing it in her fingers before remembering she wasn't here as a thief. She caught Alucard's eye and toasted him with a wink. As she lapped the hall, taking in the main floor and the gallery above and sipping sweet wine, she counted the bodies to occupy her mind and keep her composure. 36 magicians, herself included, 12 from each of the three empires, and all marked by a mask on top of their head, or under their arm, or slung over their shoulder. 24 servants, give or take, it was hard to tell, dressed alike as they were and always moving. 12 guards, 15 ostra, judging by their haughty expressions, 6 vestra, going by their royal pins, 2 blonde Vescans wearing crowns instead of masks, each with an entourage of 6, and a tall Pharaoan with an expressionless face and an entourage of 8, the Arnesian king and queen in splendid red and gold, Prince Rai in the gallery above, and standing beside him, Kel. Lila held her breath. For once, Kel's auburn hair was swept back from his face, revealing both the crisp blue of his left eye and the glossy black of his right. He wasn't wearing his usual coat, in any of its forms. Instead, he was dressed head to toe in elegant black, a gold pin over his heart. Kel had told her once that he felt more like possession than prince, but standing at Rai's side, one hand around his glass and the other on the rail as he gazed down on the crowd, he looked like he belonged. The prince said something, and Kel's face lit up in a silent laugh. Where was the bloodied boy who'd collapsed on her bedroom floor? Where was the tortured magician, veins turning black as he fought a talisman's pull? Where was the sad, lonely royal who'd stood on the docks and watched her walk away? That last one she could almost see. There, at the edge of his mouth, the corner of his eye. Lila felt her body moving toward him, drawn as if by gravity, several steps lost before she caught herself. She wasn't Lila Bard tonight. She was Stassian Elsor, and while the illusion seemed to be holding well enough, she knew it would crumble in front of Kel. And in spite of that, part of her still wanted to catch his eye, relish his moment of surprise, watch it dissolve into recognition, and hopefully, welcome. But she couldn't imagine he'd be glad to see her, not here, mingling with the throngs of competitors. And in truth, Lila savored the sensation of watching without being watched. It made her feel like a predator, and in a room of magicians, that was something.
I don't believe we've met, came a voice behind her in accented English.
She turned to find a young man, tall and slender, with reddish-brown hair and dark lashes, circling gray eyes. He had a silver-white mask tucked beneath his arm, and he shifted it to his other side before extending a gloved hand.
Kamarov, he said genially. Kamarov lost.
So this was the elusive magician, the one neither Jannar nor Alucard had managed to find. She didn't see what all the fuss was about.
Stacion Elsor, she answered.
Well, Master Elsor, he said with a confident smile, perhaps we will meet in the arena.
She raised a brow and began to move away.
Perhaps,